I started dreading the practice of medicine when I lost my patients and found consumers, the doctor said to me. I asked him what he meant. He said, for the first 20 years of my practice, I had patients. Then a while ago, I started getting consumers, people who looked on their health as a financial transaction. They paid me as if they were paying their car mechanic to have their car fixed, and they expected me to deliver health. If they stayed sick, they felt betrayed, cheated, and as if they were victims of false advertising or something. In our economy, everything is reduced to the level of a business transaction, an exchange of goods. Yet, our health is more than that. I wonder if that's why there's little real gratitude in our relationship with our doctors. In our world, our desires are elevated to the level of our needs, and our needs quickly become our rights, and since more and more has become my right, there isn't much gratitude around. Why should I be grateful when it's my right? Yet good health is a good deal more than a right, and sickness is a good deal more as well. Sickness is about the worst thing that life can do to you. Not only the pain and the physical misery, but the emotional and spiritual anguish as well. You ask, why? Why me? Why did this happen to me? Sickness is the everyday in-life experience of vulnerability, demise, and death. Sickness is, at its worst, a foretaste of what it's like to have the world go on without you, to be nothing. Sickness is a reminder that life is fragile and limited and vulnerable, in short, terminal. Sickness is a miniature brush with death. I wonder if that's why we who are well are sometimes threatened by sick people. We send a call or card or maybe make a call, but it can be difficult to visit, to physically confront a person who's seriously ill. Is that why we scurry desperately to find a reason for every illness, some virus that can be conquered, some new treatment? Is that why we isolate those who are ill? In modern leper colonies called hospitals and nursing homes, rather than risk for caring for them ourselves. Out in Samaria, on his way back to Jerusalem, Jesus meets 10 very sick people, 10 lepers. Why is he going to Jerusalem? You know what's waiting for him there. Who is pacing back and forth in Jerusalem expecting Jesus? It's death. That Jesus is an outcast in Samaria, that he is on his way to death, makes that an interesting place to meet 10 lepers. Here are 10 people who have been cast out by their families, their homes, made to wander helplessly because they have a dreaded disease. Anybody with health insurance knows what I'm talking about. Here are not only 10 sick people, but also, without stretching things too far, here are 10 dead people. They are marked for death, not just in the future, but now, today. Like Jesus himself, they are doomed to die. For as far as these lepers' families are concerned, they are dead. And so it takes a condemned outcast to know a condemned outcast. Out in Samaria, an outcast named Jesus meets outcast named lepers. Moreover, at least one of them is a Samaritan, so he has two strikes against him. For Samaritans were hated by the Jews as an alien people, a corrupted, compromised religion. So these 10 folks are dead men walking, if not yet physically, spiritually, socially dead. Standing well away from Jesus, as lepers were legally required to do, they cried out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Jesus looks at them and tells them to go and show yourselves to the priests. Here, Jesus is referring to a passage in Leviticus, which specifies what a priest is to do with a leper who happens to get healed. A leper is not allowed in the temple because lepers were thought to be unclean. If cured, the leper must first ritually be purified by a priest in order to worship at the temple. So Jesus' command to them is a bit confusing. They have been asked to be healed, but Jesus has done nothing to heal them. He's only told them to go and act as if they were healed. Go present yourself to the priest as if you are whole, healed, accepted, living people. Strange, but let's face it, Jesus is strange. So they go. Luke doesn't say where they went, whether they went to the temple or just plain bumping into each other to get out of the way of Jesus, who's acting and talking strangely. At any rate, they go, and as they go, they are healed. Nine of them just keep on going. Apparently, they make no connection between Jesus' weird reply and their recovery from leprosy. After all, this wasn't by the book. Jesus didn't do what's expected from a healer. He didn't touch them with mud and spit, as he once did a blind man. He didn't command demons come out of him, as he did with some sick people. He didn't even say, be healed. As far as they were concerned, Jesus did nothing more than state the obvious. His connection to their healing is tenuous at best. But one leper, a Samaritan, did make a connection. He came back. He came back loudly, praising God, screaming at the top of his lungs, and he falls at Jesus' feet, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. Luke notes, and he was a Samaritan. So he was a two-time loser, a double dead duck. And Jesus once again says the unexpected. Hey, what happened to the other nine? Has only one come back to say thanks, and him, a Samaritan of all things? Get up, go on your way. Your faith has saved you. So what do you make of this medical miracle? One Samaritan leper had faith and was healed. The other nine, who presumably had no faith, were also healed. What's the difference between the unthankful nine and the thankful one that Jesus is pinpointing with his terse, if not downright gruff, reply? Get up and go, your faith has saved you. The 10 lepers were all dead people, whether you're talking physically or spiritually or socially, they're dead. They would love to get healed, which in this context means they would love to get raised from the dead, resurrected, which they assume means they would be sent home for a new life where they would be like everybody else, normal. They expected that's what Mr. Resurrection Jesus is all about, a return to the normal, a revival of the ordinary for people who, because of their illnesses and infirmities, are abnormal and peculiar. But one of the healed lepers, the Samaritan, realizes real resurrection. He comes back and he says thanks. He realizes that healing puts him in relationship to Jesus, and that that relationship alone has made him whole and alive again. All the other nine wanted out of Jesus was to be made well, to start over again, doing what everybody else has been doing, going to work, attending school, eating hamburgers, meeting nice Samaritan girls, starting a family of nice ordinary kids, owning a minivan. And who could blame them? Later, these normal nine would say, who, me, a leper? You gotta be kidding. I eat hamburgers, I own a minivan, never been sick a day in my life, not me. But that one Samaritan comes back, not only cured, but saved, because he alone saw his resurrection wasn't just something for the future, it was now. He was saved and accepted to Jesus now, while he was still sick, untouchable, before he got well. He alone realized that Jesus didn't want to make people well, much less normal. Jesus wanted to raise people from the dead. Easter is now. Those poor healed 9 lepers go away unsaved precisely because they put their lives as lepers, as outcasts, as dead people behind them, and went on to be nothing but normal. All those years of suffering and injustice and pain and ostracism just gone. Who? Me? A leper? Not me. I'm okay. The healing began for all of them, not when they were healed, even a hospital could do that, but when they met Jesus, who took them, all 10 of them, leprosy, outcastness, deadness, and all, just as they were. But only one of them knew it, so he alone came back to say, "Thanks, Jesus, I needed that." 9 got healed, but only 1 got saved. Your relationship to my accepting, embracing, life-giving, extravagant love has saved you. Not your clear, clean, whitewashed skin. Not your good, Bible-believing, cleaned-up, apple-pie, beaver-cleaver normality has saved you. I have saved you just as you are. I am here only for the sick. It's as if Jesus says. And for that, the Samaritan rightly says, "Thanks." You see, it's a gift. When will we ever get that through our heads? It's a gift. Can you say the word grace, boys and girls? When grace is offered, we are on our way to getting more than even a dermatologist can do for us. We are on our way to being saved, warts, leprosy, and all. Where are the other 9? Why aren't they leaping and shouting for joy, partying with the Father, having a time of their lives? Where are the other 9? Well, they're back at work, back to business as usual, with nothing more than the merely normal. Skin now clean and clear, lives progressing along nicely, everything so utterly, boringly normal. What a shame to have met Jesus, the Lord, the giver of life, the one who loves to eat and drink with sinners, who takes us and embraces us just as we are, and to come away with nothing more than normal. What a shame to be out on the road to death, and aren't we all? And to have met Jesus headed to the cross and only come away headed where we might have gone anyway, when we could have been saved. In 2 weeks' time, we're going to ask you to come here and make a pledge to God's work in this church in the coming year. What a shame to make a pledge to the Church of St. Michael and St. George to keep the lights on when you could be offering back to Jesus from the gifts he has given you. Just before this story of the 10 lepers is the most familiar story of the New Testament, the story of the prodigal son. Can you picture that prodigal son on his way back home from the far country, brushing off his old dirty clothes, trying to clean the slop off his tie, attempting to kill the odor of cheap perfume with his girlfriends, with some old spice slapped around, desperate to get normal, memorizing his penitent good little boy speech, "Father, I have sinned. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants." No. "Father, I have now seen the error of my ways. What I really want to do now at last is the right thing. I've done a lot of maturing since my sophomore year. I really finally got my act together." No. Dad, father, look, mistakes have been made. I'll admit that I've made my share, but it's over now. I'm ready to come back and take my place on the farm." But the father rushes out to meet the son before the boy gets a chance to say anything or to promise anything, to promise to do better and fly right. The father takes the son on the only basis there is, the father's own embracing, extravagant, life-giving love. The boy can come back home, not by anything he says or does, smelly little sinner that he really is, but only because of the Father's grace. What did the Father shout? "My son who was dead is now alive." Easter is now. The son stuffed back in his grimy pocket all those penitent pleading speeches, all those declarations about what a nice normal son he was now going to become. The only thing he could say was thanks, which is really all his boring stay-at-home older brother could say for that matter. The only real difference between these boys is that the younger son knew his dependency on the father, and the older son didn't. Therefore, it's the younger son who says thanks. Therefore, it's the Samaritan leper who says thanks. Amen.